I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com/FU Network TV, and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. And now, here's your show.
Now, let's listen.
Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Stephen.
Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, good. It's good to have a voice.
It's the only thing we're allowed to have anymore is a voice. We're not allowed to actually see each other's faces.
Well, you and I started social distancing when recording this show right from the beginning.
Because, it's true.
Yeah, I'm in my home and you're in your home, and it's always been that way. And so we are about as socially distant as possible.
Yeah, and not only that, now I know you do, I mean, you get out and do a lot of shows and things, so you get out there and press the flesh pretty regularly. I've worked from home for the last, 3.5 years, and before that I guess I was at home mostly too. I was in an office setting for ages, and I see some of these people now are saying, I've been home for 8 days now, and it's driving me crazy. It's like, what? Welcome to my life.
Yeah, well, you know, I should just mention, by the way, as we start, that we're planning here at the FU Network, working with our friends at Stage 10, which is a groundbreaking Canadian technology company. We're going to be producing what we're calling stir crazy programming, which is programming that basically their technology works like a radio phone-in show, but with video. And you can use your phone, you can use your webcam, you can use your tablet, you can use your laptop, whatever. And you just you click a certain thing, and you get in a queue, and it's just like a radio show, and you can talk to the people who are on the show and ask questions and participate. And we've got plans to do one show that's we're throwing it out there for people to talk about how their life has already changed because of this virus, like the changes they've already made and how it's affected their life and so on so far. And then we're going to do probably an Ed the Sock quiz show, like a game show.
And, fun.
Yeah, and people can, we're working that out. And then...
Are there prizes?
Yeah, there are prizes, and we're
wow.
Very happy.
Okay, I'm in.
Well, we're planning for them to be very Canadian prizes.
Oh dear.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, like, because Canadian game shows are known for having extremely lame prizes.
Yes,
you know,
they are.
it's like you don't even get the turtle wax. But we might as well celebrate that.
That's right. Here's the turtle. Make your own wax.
That's right. We may as well celebrate the bad game show prizes as part of our heritage. But the goal of it is fun and connecting people. And then there is a plan for us, for Ed the Sock and Leanna Kay to... one night only, unless we do another one. Or
then it'd be two nights only.
But it used to be Ed and Red's night party. It'll be Ed and Red's net party. And it'll be a show where people can, they at home, they can perform a song, they can tell a joke, they can just talk, they can just ask questions, they can do like an Ask Me Anything for Ed or Leanna. And the whole point of these programs is that even though we have to maintain social distance, we don't have to be socially distant. We can bridge that gap. We can still be apart and yet together. And this technology allows us to do that, everybody to be part of the same program, part of the same conversation, and almost, you know, part of the same party while still being at home and not breaking any...
Not spreading your germs around.
Yeah, not breaking any of the sensible precautions, because the precautions are sensible. The problem is that, you get such mashups, especially don't get your information from social media.
Oh, God.
Because what you get there is mashups of half actual information or two pieces of actual information, but they're not pieces of the same piece of information. And so they're, you know, almost glued together so that to make them something that is not advisable. You know, you get the front end. It's like when people go to a party as a horse and one of them has to be the back end. It's like that. You'll get the front part of one news story or one advisory, and then you get the back part of another one, and they get joined together, and people are, there's mistruth. And of course, when things like this happen, it's like I've always said that people in crowds who try to sound smart are the ones who always predict the worst things are going to happen. Because if you try to sound the least bit upbeat, then you're some kind of fool. You know, like, you know, if you try to sound hopeful or anything like that, you're some kind of fool. The smart person is the one that says, well, you're an idiot. This bad's going to happen. It's always, people always defer to the intelligence of the person who says that the worst is going to happen. I don't know why. And everybody else is a Pollyanna and not, they don't understand the world. So you get,
well, I mean, it validates their fears that they're feeling, and they say, okay, look, this guy gets it. Well, what I'm feeling, which is, you know, right now, you know, in the middle of a rapidly escalating pandemic, is I'm feeling very, very nervous. I'm feeling uncertain. I'm seeing, you know, the stock market going to crap. I'm being stuck in my house, you know, toilet paper. Oh my God, toilet paper. Do I have enough toilet paper? And if someone says something that's really, really outlandish, it's really terrible, you know, like, oh, the death toll is going to be, you know, this number, it makes you feel justified in your own feeling of terror inside, that they say, okay, they're giving you permission to feel terrible, to feel really scared. And that isn't generally that helpful.
No.
I mean, it's helpful if it keeps you, you know, doing the sensible precautions, but they're running around in circles screaming and buying up every mask and every jar of Purell and, you know, more toilet paper than you can use in the next 5 years. That's not helpful.
Yeah. Well, somebody did a calculation on the internet based on, I don't know where they got their numbers from. This is clearly for entertainment purposes. But based on the number of rolls of toilet paper in the average package and the average number that people were buying when they were hoarding, the average number of sheets in each roll and the average number of sheets needed per bowel movement on average, and they came to the figure that in order to use all of that toilet paper, you would have had to defecate 123 times a day.
Well, you know, if that's what's happening, COVID-19 is not your biggest problem.
No, and quite frankly, if you're having stomach problems, you know, with upper or lower GI problems, that's not the COVID virus.
Yes, that's not one of the symptoms. It's certainly not one of the common symptoms.
No, you should have been hoarding Kleenex. So, I mean, in a pinch, toilet paper will do the same job. But people don't understand, and I think you know why the hoarding happened.
It's something you can do. I mean, because everyone feels powerless, and it's like, okay, this is something I can do. I can go buy toilet paper, and I'm actually doing something as opposed to sitting at home going like, what the hell am I going to do?
Well, toilet paper was relatively cheap, and people were imagining themselves in their homes for months for some reason. It's like, well, you'll have the toilet paper, but what food are you going to eat that's going to create the defecation that you're going to need it for? But it happened to Leanna and I in that we're at we had a regular supply of toilet paper, but you go to the store and you see people hoarding and you think, you know what? What if, because of these people hoarding, when I come here to get my normal amount, it's all gone. Left. I'm not going to have any.
I got to get mine.
Yeah. So, you know, we bought when we didn't need. We didn't hoard, but we bought, you know, an extra 24 rolls or whatever the hell. Because also, you know, at that point in time, there was confusion. Are all the stores going to shut down? Now we know grocery stores, pharmacies, and I heard today, though I haven't confirmed it, pet stores will be allowed to stay open to provide foodstuffs and medication, which, you know, makes sense. The fear was that everything was just going to shut down and everyone was going to be dropping dead. And you had this Dr. Yang in China, who was an expert on SARS. And back in January, there was an article published in The Guardian and one other place where he said that it's possible with COVID-19 that there could be millions of infections and deaths, millions of deaths around the world. And so people were imagining bodies in the street or The Walking Dead. And so they didn't know. Are stores going to be closed? Are grocery stores going to be closed because there's nobody well enough to work there? You know, nobody well enough to drive the trucks to stock them? Like, there was just such a confusion. And that orange clown they have in the United States, you know, running their country into the ground with his conflicting statements and none of them informed, was just adding to that stew of fear. And the fear, you know, concern's a healthy thing. Fear is not a healthy thing.
Yeah.
Because concern means you can plan. Fear means you do things that are not rational.
Yeah, you know, concern motivates you to do rational things. Like you said, fear motivates you to do irrational things. And the, you know, talking about, you know, misinformation, I mean, when it starts coming from the President of the United States, when he's being filmed in meetings early on, when it was, you know, less apparently serious, saying like, well, why don't we just give everyone like a double dose of the flu vaccine? And all the immunologists around the table are looking at each other going like, it doesn't work that way. You know, this is about genetics. This is about stuff that's pretty complicated. And said, well, and there was a governor in one of the southern states. I'm not gonna name the state because I don't know which one it was, but it was one of those states that's not known for being tremendously big on science. And they're saying, well, I don't worry about this. We got lots of penicillin. Like, no, this is a virus. Penicillin is bacterial. They're completely different organisms. You know, one's alive, one isn't. One's big, one's very small, and it doesn't have any effect. So, you know, when you hear that coming from people who are elected to lead and make these decisions, you know, like famously in 2018, you know, Trump said, well, the CDC, you know, we haven't had a pandemic in a long time, and public health, everything's going well, so we don't need all these people, and we can just throw together a team if anything ever happens. So cut funding for the Center for Disease Control.
Why doesn't he apply that to fire stations?
Yeah. My house hasn't burned down in a long time.
Yeah, if there's a fire, we can throw some people together to go and, you know, yeah. It's, I mean, the man's, okay, getting misinformation from Donald Trump is not a surprise. The man does not, he has no regard.
Most of us have a filter now.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not, I don't think that, he is an active liar on many things. There are many things where he knows what the truth is and tells something else. But there are also many things where he just doesn't care
just
about whether
ignorant.
Something's true or not true.
Yep, like, very casual with the truth.
Yeah, he's a condo salesman, basically. Yeah. You know,
what's it
going
to take to get? I'll say anything it takes to get you into this condo.
Yeah, he may as well be a timeshare guy in Florida. And so, what matters to him is if you believe what he says, whether what he says is true or not doesn't matter to him. It only matters if he gets you to believe it. He doesn't care what the truth is. His relationship with truth versus lies is very different from the average person. So getting bad information from him, if he was giving out good information, I wouldn't believe it.
Yep.
You know, it's gotten to that point because he's not reliable. You can't trust him. And now, and it may have happened by the time people hear this, there's talk that he's going to fire Dr. Gauci, who's his chief, you know, the chief
spokesman.
Yeah.
And he's a sensible guy. I mean, there's a couple of times where I've seen him speaking and he's been really uncomfortable trying to justify things the White House has said.
And there's been other times when he's completely contradicted Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's finally going like, look, this is a serious health problem. I'm just going to tell you the way it is here. And he isn't towing the party line. But the problem is science doesn't have a party line. Science is science. As they say, science doesn't care what you believe. It is.
Yeah. I mean, we could do a show about the orthodoxy within science and how that science has been wrong about things in the past, but they don't want to ever admit it until it's right in their face because there is an orthodoxy. But this isn't that case. And you get, you know, I put up on social media, I quoted Dr. Tam, who I forget her official title, but she is something like the chief medical officer of health.
That's right.
Yep. in for Canada.
For Canada.
Yeah.
She's the public face now. If you turn on CBC, she is the one who's giving all the conferences.
That's right. And I quoted her as to what her recommendations were. And of course, the know-it-all brigade said, stop spreading misinformation. You want people to die. You're sending people to die by putting out all this wrong information. Said, what are you talking about? I had the quotation marks around it, and yep. I said who it was.
An attribution from the person who knows the most about this.
Yeah, and what she was saying was not, everybody stay indoors, no one go out. She was giving instructions in this particular speech for the most sensible ways to go out, the most sensible times.
Yep.
She was not saying, because she recognizes people can't always stay in their homes.
No,
so she was saying, take transit and go shopping in off-peak hours, for example. You know, you encounter less people. And, you know, it's just sensible things like that. But it was about what to do when you are out of the house. So clearly, she was not believing that people should be staying in their homes locked up
24/7.
For 3 weeks. You know, it's funny how the 2 week period quickly became 3 weeks in people's minds, as far as the length of time it takes the virus to work its way through you one way or another. And then there was the people who constantly were comparing Canada to Italy. And if I objected and said, Canada's not Italy.
No, and, all kinds of reasons.
Oh, and no two countries are the same. There are political, there are cultural, there are geographic, there's environmental. Yeah, there's demographic. There's so many things, and cultural. Mm-hmm. There are so many things that separate countries from each other, which will affect the nature of the outbreak, the nature of the spread, that you can't compare.
No, of course. You know, Canada naturally has sort of social distancing. I mean, we're not, we like our space. I mean, we're used to a big country. We're used to having a lot, even in the cities. We're used to being, you know, except for if you're on the TTC at rush hour, okay, then you give up your space, but we don't like it. So, unlike the Italians, who are much more, you know, crowded into city centers, and they're much more hands-on touchy than Canadians
also, are. They also have an older population than we do.
Yeah, exactly, which is more at risk.
Yeah, and
a little more rule adverse too. Canadians are great at following rules. We like rules. We
think if they make sense.
Rules run civilization, and you know we believe in it. And you know with the voluntary self quarantines and all the rest, you know people say, "Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to send them to the police?" They say, "Well, we're Canadians. We generally don't have to do that because we kind of take it seriously. And it's in our nature." And even Pierre Burton wrote a book about authoritarianism and Canadians back in the 60s or 70s, saying that we are naturally, I think it's called deference to authority. I remember I'm probably on my shelf here if I look around my room. And it's about Canadians being deferential towards authority, whereas Italians tend to be a little more lackadaisical when it comes to being told what to do.
Yeah, and
if I can generalize about an entire thing, 60 million people. Yeah.
Yeah. But the know-it-alls were always, I do not believe that we are going to have the same kind of outbreak in Canada that has occurred in Italy. And they said, Italy thought that too. It's like, okay, great. You're a freaking genius. They are not the same. And you know what? Any global figures that you hear, global percentages, like global mortality rate, for example, that takes every country in the world. Countries that are in the first world, second world, and third world, countries that have varying degrees of access to healthcare,
sanitation, good food, just general quality of life.
Yeah, there's such a gamut. You're taking rich first world countries and lumping them in with the poorest of the third world countries. You're putting it all together, taking the amounts of the mortality rate from each of these, and you're coming out with an average. Well, that average is not authoritative, because that average is not going to, it's meaningless, quite frankly.
Yeah.
The only average that matters, the only mortality rate that matters, is the mortality rate in the country you're in right now. They're making one of those smoothies from Jamba Juice in the States. Yes. Like you just throw in a bunch of things and it comes out one blended flavor.
It tastes like mango. Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what they put in it. It tastes like mango.
Yeah, it's all but mango. But that's why, and if you object and say, look, global mortality rates are not reliable. Yeah. In it's the same way in Canada. We don't vote for prime minister. We vote for our MP. And then the number of MPs, the party with the greatest number of MPs generally gets to form the government. It's the same thing. Because in Canada, we don't have one election when we have a federal election. We have an election in every single district. You know, it's not one election where we're all voting for one or two candidates.
Yeah, it's not like the national popular vote makes a difference. It doesn't.
Not at all.
It's how it's spread out over all kinds of things. And like you say, the coronavirus is the same. It affects different populations differently depending on the quickness of the response, the responsiveness of the population, the age, the general well-being, how tightly packed everybody is into cities. I mean, all these things are factors. So it makes it really difficult to generalize about something like this.
And, I put up the fact that I was actually stunned by how many people die of the flu every year in Canada. It's about, averages at about 3,500 people.
And worldwide, the flu, they estimate, I think actually the same organization that is at the forefront of all this, the World Health Organization, estimates that flu kills between 250,000 and 500,000 people a year globally.
Yeah, which I mean, to me, that
a lot of people
that stunned me. And it kills the same people who are at risk from the flu is a coronavirus.
Yeah.
And it kills the same number of people. So I put up, look, right now we don't even have the same anywhere near the number of cases or deaths that the flu gives us. So let's calm down. And then people point out, this isn't the flu. Like, I know it's not the flu, but I'm trying to get you to calm down and think about it and think that we can stop this from becoming a crazy pandemic, worse than it is, by following sensible procedures. There are not going to be, no matter how you half read that story from Dr. What did I say his name was? Yauchi? No matter how you half read that story about it, there could be millions of deaths. And people are, they seem to be skipping past the could be part and turning could be into will be. You know, there could be this many million deaths. That's if the worst case scenario happens everywhere and nobody takes any precautions. Like, that's the most outside edge, but people take the could be and they turn it into will be. And if you object to that, they say you're spreading false information and making people too comfortable, and you're gonna get people to go out and party. It's like, no, I'm just giving actual information.
Yeah. I'm not telling you not to observe the protocols, wash your hands and keep away from people. And if you're feeling sick, stay in and away from everybody else, but don't panic because, it's not the worst case scenario.
Yeah. I mean, the client that I'm working with now, I took on a big job. And it's a great place to work, but the HR director, whose office is next to mine, heard that my wife has asthma.
Mm-hmm.
She said, go home. She said, the work you do can be done from home.
Yep. If you don't want to be bringing it back to someone who's vulnerable. Yeah.
She said, if you need to come in to grab some things or to get some content or whatever, fine. But I'm telling you to go home because you are exposing your wife to something that is potentially lethal.
Yeah, and that's a sensible contextual reaction to it.
Yeah, and she said you're still going to get paid because you're still doing your work. Because my arrangement with them is that if I tell them one day I'm staying home and working from home today, I stay home and work from home. There's no comments or nothing. It was in the agreement. But I tend to like being at the workplace. But they don't want. They're trying to minimize the number of people who are at the workplace who can do their job just as well from elsewhere, still provide value for the company, still do their job, still get paid, but not expose themselves or expose other people. They, you know, you can be a carrier and not know.
Yeah, and, well, and that's one of the things about this thing. You know, it's the secret, you know, sort of the secretness of the virus. It's like you never know who could be carrying the virus. And there have been people. I mean, you know, historically, there have been people who've been tremendous super carriers of the virus. Typhoid Mary is a great example. You know, and people are going like, I didn't think she was a real person. I said, yeah, she was a real person. She was an Irish chef in New York, in Boston area. And Chicago. And she cooked for families and soup kitchens, all kinds of things. And she never showed a single symptom. But she was like a germ factory that they just, for whatever reason, her immune system never made her sick. But she just produced and off gassed all of this virus, this typhus. And they ended up finally having to put her in jail for the last 23 years of her life because she wouldn't stop cooking for people.
Well, I mean, put somebody in jail. isolation.
Well, they kept trying to quarantine, tell her to self quarantine, and she wouldn't. And she said, no, I understand. And then she just, but cooking's what I do, and I'm never sick, so why?
And you know what? That segues perfectly to another part of this human reaction here in Canada, and I'm sure it's been other places, but I know of it happening here, of young people who were initially determined to be, unless they had underlying medical conditions, if they were just generally young, healthy people, they were not really the target for this virus. And if they got it, they would survive it. And so they were partying, and they were partying downtown on the streets over the weekend.
Yes. And they're down in Miami in March break. Yeah.
Yeah. And they gleefully created a hashtag boomer remover. Yes. Because, this generation, which is all about don't judge, and don't be bigoted, and don't be prejudiced, and don't be ist. It shows that there's a percentage of them who are just full of crap. And the first chance they get, they are judging, they are ageist, they are prejudiced, and they are gleeful about the death of an entire generation. Forgetting perhaps that might be their grandparents, or mm-hmm. in some cases their parents, if they waited long to have children. But it's turned out that they're finding more and more people, young people, coming down with this illness in a serious way.
Yeah, they're still finding generally people sort of over the age of 18, young adults, they call them. So you're talking about 20-year-olds.
Children, thankfully, yes, so far, seem to be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So far. And
I hope
the thing about this illness is scientists are still trying to understand it. I mean, Canadian team, the genome's been sequenced and it's been isolated by a Canadian team. It all blends together. It seems like it was just earlier this week. And so we're starting to understand it and understand who it attacks. But the fact, the testing part of it, everyone who wants a test is like, I want to know if I've got it. The testing doesn't work that way. You present with symptoms. And if the symptoms are consistent with it and you've got a history of travel or contact or something else, then you get a test because then you are likely or possibly infected with the virus. But otherwise, it could be a cold, it could be seasonal allergies, it could be the regular flu, which is still around. Mm-hmm. And you don't know how big the population is until you have a really good test going on. And in the United States, cynically, it's clear just from what Trump has said himself, they didn't want to test people because then the numbers would go up and it would look very bad politically. And Trump said as much himself when I'm not sure it was the Diamond Princess, one of the cruise lines, was off the west coast of the United States, and Trump was saying, I don't want them coming ashore because it'll bump up our numbers of people who have the virus.
Yeah.
Not because they're transmission.
Quite the humanitarian.
It's because like our numbers on the sheet, we're going to go from 17 people at that time to like 200 people.
Yeah.
And that looks really bad. It's like,
yeah, in fact, the same number of Americans are sick, whether they're on the ship or on the shore.
If you're 100 yards offshore, you're still sick.
You're still American.
Yeah.
And And this little factoid, when we're talking about Italy, dropped out of my head for some reason, and I'm not certain how much confirmation this has had, but there was an article in the New Yorker, which is a fairly reputable magazine.
They generally fact check.
Yeah, within the last couple of years, that the Italian fashion, like the garment industry, and they have been importing workers from China. Because they're putting out fashions that say made in Italy, which everyone wants. Oh, the Italian fashions, it's made in Italy, but it's being made by Chinese workers.
Chinese labor in a garment factory.
Yeah, and that they were coming from, some of them were coming from Wuhan province. And this article was written to point out that the fashion that people get, that they pay a lot of money for, that says made in Italy, if you think you're getting it, from Italian craftsmen, you're not. It was not, this was well before there was anything about a virus. But if that is in fact true, that's another thing that can explain why Italy's numbers were so high, if they were importing workers from, sort of ground zero of where this came from.
Well, and it was under the surface all the time until it kind of exploded.
Yeah, and...
And I think I said in our podcast last time we were together was, the Black Death, came into, the Great Plague of 1347 to 1351, which killed, between a third and a half of Europe with the bubonic plague. Its landing point was Genoa, because Italy at that point was a trading nation, and it was trading with Asia Minor and with China. And it came in on ships and ran through the population of Europe. But that was sort of the entry point, which is, historically interesting. I'm not sure it's significant particularly. It's certainly ironic if this is started there again, the history of viruses and illnesses is interesting. I mean, it's important. Unfortunately, it leads to xenophobia, where everyone is going like, even the White House is saying they're calling it the Kung Fu flu. They're calling it the China flu. And it's like, viruses don't really care. I mean, they don't care about borders. They don't care about nationalities. They don't care about what flag you're under. Viruses pop up all over the place, whether it's Ebola or if it's COVID-19 or MERS or SARS. There's all, the Spanish flu. They pop up somewhere for a reason. And it's not because people are dirty or filthy or eat the wrong things. It's, a lot of it is just plain bad, dumb luck and biology. It happens and then it gets passed around, especially in a global economy like we have now with people who are flying everywhere. And an illness can be in Italy, can be in Rome, in the morning, it can be in New York in the afternoon. It doesn't care. So to be xenophobic about this, really isn't helpful, really isn't fair. It defies the science. And during the Black Death, I mean, the people who got blamed for it, of course, the people you blame for everything, the Jews.
I had heard that it was partially the reason was because part of Jewish culture and religious rituals was bathing, regular bathing.
Well, and also kosher food.
It was cleaner.
They were basically cleaner people, and they lived, and they were forced to live in isolated settlements. So the plague would be raging all over the place, but because the Jews were forced to keep to themselves in their own ghettos, it didn't go in there because they had very little contact with the outside world. So what happened is everyone went like, hey, the Jews aren't getting it. They must be behind it. And and the whole idea of Jews being well poisoners came from the Middle Age plagues, that, we must be dying because the Jews are sneaking into our villages at night and putting poison in our wells. It's like,
Other than the Mossad, which are very, very quiet and stealthy. I don't know. Listen, I'm Jewish, raised Jewish, went to school with a lot of Jewish people. There's none of us that could have got together quietly at night and poisoned a well. We'd be all noisier in hell and arguing with each other the whole time.
Like the Three Stooges.
Who were Jews.
Who were Jewish, yes.
There's a reason that there's very few ninjus. We tend to be a vocal people.
In Canada, it's really disappointing. I mean, just this week, there's been fundraising emails and posts on social media. Aaron O'Toole, again, everyone's favorite right-wing conservative.
Oh, my God.
Who are saying, like, you know, okay, Trudeau's doing all this kind of stuff, but he hasn't closed all those illegal immigrants coming in Roxton Road, and they're bringing their germs with them up from the United States, all these illegal refugee border crossers. It's like, you know, this is just like the well poisoners. This is just like, here's a foreign group who is no more likely to have COVID-19 as anybody else. And in fact, you know, they all get, you know, they're all, you know, they're tested for their temperature. They're, you know, the same sort of thing that anyone coming into the country right now is tested for.
Nobody just walks in. The people who come into this country are put through health tests.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you said before that, I'll get to that in a second, because you mentioned Aaron O'Toole, and Aaron O'Toole was the guy who was earlier this week saying that we should call out the military and force people off the streets and guard their doors so that they don't leave. Like, it's like, what's
kind of, that's the personal responsibility and freedom party for you.
Yeah. That's And the get the government out of our lives party.
Yes. But you have a soldier at every door.
Yeah. But you know,
which was a different kind of conservative government.
It's, I mean, you know, it sounds reasonable as long as it's, you know, not the structure of a fascist state, which is exactly what it is. And it's like he was having drinks with Mel Lastman, and they were talking about snow removal, and somehow Aaron O'Toole said, I know, I'm running for the leadership. I need some press. I'll say that we should call out the military and force people indoors. And that would go over real well. It's just one of the absurd ideas that Aaron O'Toole has. I almost hesitate to call them ideas. They're things that form in his head that come out of his mouth, but I don't want to sully the word idea by applying it to the things that the statements he makes. And there, you mentioned earlier that germs, you know, and viruses, they don't care where they're from. They don't have a nationality. And they don't, you know, they don't care if they, you know, spread from China or spread from Italy or spread from Israel or spread from Cambodia or spread from wherever. They don't care. It's not part of their active cognition. But you know who does care where viruses come from, especially is Americans. And that's why you hear the Kung Fu flu, the Wuhan virus, the Chinese virus. And that's why you're seeing a huge uptick in the United States of hate crimes against Asian people.
Asians, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's not good to lump Chinese and Korean and, you know,
Japanese.
As Asians, but because they all have distinct cultures, just because they come from that part of the world, it's not good to lump them together. However, the fact is, in the United States, very many people who are of the mindset that would go and commit violence against somebody they think has brought the disease to the world, they're not able to tell the distinctions between anybody from Japan versus China versus Korea. Like, they, to them, they're all Chinese. And, you know, King of the Hill, a brilliant animated sitcom for years.
Yeah.
The neighbor was Laotian. And one of the less smart characters says, "So are you Japanese or Chinese?" And he says, "I'm Laotian." Pause. And he says, "So are you Japanese or Chinese?"
Yeah.
And so,
well, these are the same people who were beating up Sikhs because they were ISIS terrorists. So,
well, yes, after 9/11, they were beating up Indian
Al-Qaeda.
People and anybody in a turban. And because, hey, your skin's brown, you are the other. We must beat you. And that's what's happening, unfortunately, in the United States to a lot of people who, you know, listen, the Chinese have been in the United States for generations. It always freaks me out when I go down to California and I'll hear somebody talking and I turn around and it's somebody who's of Chinese heritage and they sound so white.
Yes.
Like, so white. Those of us up here in our mosaic who come from different ethnic groups, we retain certain cadences in our speech. Not all the time. but there is a tendency to have different cadences, and you can sometimes tell that somebody isn't someone who came over on the Mayflower. But in the States, I mean, the Chinese have been there so long, if you had them on radio or you were just listening, you couldn't tell them from regular Americans. And
yet, well, a lot have been there from the 1850s, building the railroads.
Yeah, they were the canary in the mine shaft in many of those places, you know, unfortunately. And then of course, we had them build the railroads here in Canada and then told them to get out.
Yes.
But these people who are Americans are being beaten because these ignorant people who are ignorant and afraid, which is a very, very bad combination, often you find them comorbid, are beating up on people they determine are Chinese and are responsible for ruining their good time. Yeah. And it's a disturbing trend.
Well, and not just that. I mean, you've got, you know, the some of it's purposeful misinformation. Some of it is just plain ignorance, like you said. But there are people who are floating these wild conspiracy theories that this is some sort of a bioweapon that was developed in a Wuhan lab and it was sent to destroy the American economy. And, it got loose by accident and it was really just this nefarious plot right out of a James Bond movie. And it's like,
how did it get loose by accident? Like somebody left the door open and the virus was like, hey, now's my time to get out.
I don't know. Didn't you see I Am Legend or Planet of the Apes? I mean, that's how it gets out. It was
well, Planet of the Apes. If you want to know how a virus spreads around the new ones, world, the new ones. The first new one by the I don't remember his name now. He's the guy who's doing the new Batman movie. But he, in the end of the first one, a pilot got a sickness from the lab, medical research lab, and got on his flight, coughing. And then they just showed the globe and showed the planes going everywhere and showed the little dots and showed how quickly a pandemic spread and actually nearly wiped out humanity. Yeah. And that's how these things spread. And, you know, you mentioned just now the economy, and quite frankly, I don't know if I'm more scared, but I'm equally scared about the effects on the economy, because I think that the economy will be longer in recovering than the people who are stricken with the illness.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially small businesses, you know, restaurants are so badly hit. I mean, it's sort of the lifeblood. I mean, I think it's part of good mental health. I go for a walk every day, keeping my distance from people. I have no...
For all you know, they're keeping their distance from you.
Yeah, well, absolutely they are. And it's kind of nice. You know, everyone sort of gives each other kind of a grim smile as you go by saying, yeah, we're surviving this thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see the storefronts. I live in Toronto near the Danforth. The Danforth is usually a bustling kind of place. And just doing a mental sort of thing, the ones that have the signs up that say, you know, we're closed indefinitely until things get better, until the virus passes. And other ones that say, you know, we're still open, but, you know, here are our rules. We don't take money anymore, which is kind of an alarming thing.
Yeah, it has to be.
We only take digital, which is great until like the internet stops working.
Is that happening?
Well, no, it isn't happening. I'm just saying, like, you know, if you're a customer on your home internet, there are times when it goes like, or I remember the great power failure.
Yes, I do.
It was
frightening to me because the night before, Leanna and I saw the Terminator installment, which was when Skynet took over.
And then all the power goes off.
And then the next day, all of our power is out. And I went to the car and we were going someplace and every radio station was just either not there or just noise. And I looked at Leanne and I said, Skynet. It was quite chilling. But
you know, the economy is, you know, you're right. It is. I'm hoping it's going to recover quickly. But to some extent, the package that the Canadian federal government brought in will help a bit. You know, these packages never seem to reach as many people as they should. I mean, they should be focusing on smaller you know, mom and pop kind of shops rather than the big bailouts for the big companies.
The big guys are have been sitting on piles of cash since 2008 recession. Dead
money. And when they got money, what they've been doing is buying back stock to move up their stock price, which is now in the toilet. So they're not exactly the first people I would be giving money to. I know they're employers as well. But, you know, there's a whole bunch of small to medium-sized employers and businesses that are out there that struggle and need the money more. So if I had a couple billion dollars to throw around, I'd be throwing it at them before I'd be throwing it at Air Canada again.
Yeah, well, a friend of mine, his teenage daughter, works at The Gap. And they closed the store, but they are continuing to pay her what her hours regularly would be. Well, and I think that's commendable.
Yeah, I think that's responsible.
Yeah, Hudson's Bay closed their stores, but are continuing to pay their staff. There's some places that they're closing and they're paying their staff for hours that they had been pre-scheduled for. But after, you know, when the schedule runs out, they're not going to pay them anymore. Mm-hmm. But you have to, I mean, these companies that are paying staff that aren't working and aren't bringing any
in
money
revenue into,
how long can they do that for? And they're going to have to somehow make up for that. But I worry for them less than I worry for some of the people. I see friends on Twitter or even other people that I know, how many people live check? How many families live check to check? It's an epidemic. Mm-hmm. And when the check stops coming, they can't borrow from friends and family because they don't have it either. It's the people, as always, the people
most
lowest down the chain are the ones that get hurt worst. But, you know, restaurants especially, because you're allowed to pay restaurant servers below minimum wage.
Yep.
Because the theory is that they'll top it up with tips. Mm-hmm. So even if you have, even if when restaurants were still open, you had servers working there and nobody coming in, the servers were working for less than minimum wage. And a lot of people who are, you know, some servers in some decent restaurants, they can make a very decent living. But mm-hmm. many people are young, trying to get their way through school or, you know, whatever they're doing or live their lives. And there are adults also who are not in high-paying jobs. And there are people who are in high-paying jobs who spend a lot of it because they've got a lot of expenses with the kids or with whatever. You don't know. The fact is that this slowdown / stoppage of business, there's been economists who've been saying that within a few months, the economy will, once the worst of this has passed, or they've gotten basically an understanding of the vectors of the virus, and mm-hmm. you know, they don't have to issue such broad spectrum precautions, that the economy will rebound, both in the United States and Canada.
Because there's a demand, but in the meantime, it's going to be really, really tough.
What about the people who've been out of work for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, who don't have the money to go and reinvigorate the economy, and probably don't have a roof over their damned heads? I just feel for the lower middle class, below middle class, you know, people poverty line, people without significant savings, which is most Canadians, if you believe the statistics. This is going to have a mental health effect that's going to go on longer than the physical effect from COVID-19. This is going to have an economic effect that is going to go on longer. Yes, viruses, once they're introduced, they don't really go away. We did manage to get rid of some of them, but then,
they tend to pop up again from time to time.
Well, because anti-vaxxers decided that their kids didn't need them, because they'd rely on the immunity from other kids.
Yeah, and, or they're going to rub themselves with essential oils. Yeah.
That's right. Hey, measles, welcome back. You know, and yes, they say that this virus will probably come back again in the fall, that in the warmer months, it'll die off. And yes, it's very rare for viruses to just completely go away. So yes,
yeah. No, they generally mutate themselves out of existence, or until they mutate back into something else.
Yeah, they take out the most vulnerable, as you said last week. They burn through the ones that are the most vulnerable. They kill the ones that are the most vulnerable.
The best hosts.
Yeah, and then eventually there's nobody left to kill. And you've got people developing antibodies and immunities and things of that nature, or people who just happen to not be in those risk groups and who may get sick for a couple of weeks, but they're not going to die. And I will say to the young people who were like partying it up, saying, well, maybe I'll get sick. Listen, I've had pneumonia twice in my life. The last time was oh my God, it was 32 years ago. 22 years ago was the last time I had pneumonia. It almost killed me. And I was as young as these people who were out partying. And I had it once before that. Thankfully, not since then. But I'll tell you something. As somebody who's had pneumonia...
No picnic.
It's not a picnic. I remember the first time I realized something was wrong was when I woke up one morning and sat up in bed. And simply sitting up, I was breathing and panting as if I had just run a marathon. And all I did was sit up. Yep. And trying to get from the bed to the bathroom was like, you just aren't taking in enough oxygen to make it at any speed.
Yeah,
you feel at like any moment, you feel like you're going to pass out. Maybe I'll get it and then it'll go through me. This isn't like the flu, where you cough and you'll sit and binge watch Netflix and you'll have some facial tissues that you fill and so on.
It knocks you flat.
Yeah, you can't play with something that affects your upper respiratory system. You just can't. Because first of all, there are people out there with underlying conditions who don't know they have underlying conditions because they've never been aggravated before.
Yep.
So you could be as young as 16 with an underlying condition, not know, get this, and it becomes very, very serious, or, heaven forbid, becomes it kills you. Yep. But don't be cavalier about, well, if I get it, it's gone in 14 days. Those will be 14 days that there'll be times when you wish it took you, because that I'll tell you, once you've had serious upper respiratory problems, you never forget what effort it takes to just do anything.
Yeah, no, I had walking pneumonia, like you, like 30 years ago, and it is no picnic. I mean, one of the things I think, and you hit the nail on the head. I mean, the most vulnerable, if hopefully something good comes out of this, is our appreciation for the people who are the most vulnerable. Because in the United States, they're saying, okay, we're going to close the schools, and all of a sudden they realize there's this whole hidden to most people. Ecosystem of the schools feed children, and without the schools, people are saying, like, my children are going to go hungry. And then, this is America, the world leader, the democracy that leads holds the lamp for everyone else. It's like, you've got kids who are going to starve because you close the schools. And it gives you an appreciation of just how bad things are getting for the most vulnerable, who you don't even know are the most vulnerable. And in Canada, people, who are, you said, living paycheck to paycheck, Canadians are historically better savers than most other nations. It's certainly better than our American cousins.
And yet we're still not doing all that well.
But we're still not doing that well. I mean, we don't have, the cushion. And the other thing that is really, really shocking is that we don't have a culture anymore of keeping basic supplies around. A bag of rice, a bag of potatoes, all those sorts of things. My parents grew up during the Depression. My father was more aware of it than my mother was. And there was a certain mindset that was instilled in people during the Depression, which is you kept stuff, you used stuff, you were prepared. I mean, also, wars and prepare you for that sort of thing too, that you have to be ready for anything. And in the Uber Eats, I've got nothing in the fridge kind of culture that sort of has grown up with this just-in-time inventory system and disposable paycheck and then, live for now kind of idea. When it does come down, and this is a once in a 100-year situation that we are living through right now.
I don't think it's going to be 100 years till the next one.
Well, I won't be around. Hopefully I won't be around for it.
I'm afraid that we're
good. If it's 50 years, I may not be around.
I don't even know, Stephen, if it'll be that, because the number of antibiotic resistant bugs that have popped up because of overprescription of antibiotics.
We're helping these things evolve.
I mean, SARS was not 100 years ago, nor 50 years ago.
No, but those are smaller and contained, and H1N1, and we do get these sorts of things from time to time. But like this big, like the Spanish flu size flu that COVID-19 is kind of looking at.
Swine flu.
Yeah.
Yeah,
even swine flu. I remember the swine flu, and I remember everyone talking about it, but I don't remember it being, no one was confined to their homes. It was the SARS one that the Purell dispensers first appeared in Toronto. We didn't have Purell dispensers in businesses, even in hospital entrances, until SARS came along. That was what happened that's the one of the lasting legacies of that one. But, even then, SARS, you were worried about it. I mean, people were worried about it for a couple of weeks, but it hit the market and it disrupted a few things, but stores didn't close. Everyone was just a little more careful. So then, this one is unlike most of the other ones that we've had just because of the scope of it. And certainly the panic that's been instilled through social media and the misinformation and all the, people wearing masks when a mask does you no damn good at all.
It may harm you worse. Absolutely. Unless you have the professional type masks.
Yeah.
Having just those little cotton masks with the elastic.
Oh, even the N95 masks don't do any good. I mean, and those are the professional masks. N95 is pretty much hospital grade, and they're not the full shield, but the N95, the mesh on the N95 mask, I can tell you, is 0.3 of a micron, and the COVID virus is 0.12 of a micron. So it's sort of like catching mosquitoes with a chain link fence. I mean, it's going to go right through. So, but if you're coughing and you're spraying all over, if you are ill, wear a mask by all means, but you shouldn't be out in public if you're that ill. If you need a mask, you shouldn't be out in public.
Some people, if you don't have any food at home and you have to go out, we all understand there's necessities. But make it quick, do it off hours, or go to small neighborhood stores as opposed to the giant supermarkets where there's lots of people. Yeah. And I wonder, Stephen, what do you think that there will be permanent cultural changes? You mentioned Purell from SARS, and people becoming much more, germophobic or germaware. I wonder if the handshake is going to see a resurgence, or if we're going to start seeing a lot more fist bumps replacing nodding at each other like Japanese,
doing a little bow, or
I wonder if the handshake is on its way out because of what's going on now. I don't know if it depends how long this lasts.
It'd be interesting to see how it affects us sort of in the macro. I mean, hopefully, like I say, I hope it instills in political leaders, and there's popular support for better healthcare. I mean, that would be a great outcome if Trump disbanded the
pandemic unit.
The pandemic unit, because we haven't had one for a while. So, it's like, no, you got to keep these things going. You've got to have good healthcare. I mean, Canada has always been in the forefront of sort of emergency response to all kinds of pandemics. But a lot of other countries just don't do that, and they don't take it seriously, and the way you look after your most vulnerable as well, the economic consequences of these sorts of things. I'd like to see people are now talking again about the guaranteed income as a way of protecting people from these sorts of crises. Instead of having to put together some sort of economic stimulus package and series of tax credits and tax
I'm fully in support of the guaranteed income.
But at the end of the day, it's cheaper than welfare. But
I am in support of it.
I think there could be some serious talk about that coming forward, because people are going to suffer, and they needlessly. And, you know, we should be able to look after it. It may realign our priorities, which I hope, which would be more towards the human impact of these sorts of things and less towards the corporate impact of things.
And I see when I'm out, other people who are out, and we all have that same look in our eyes. We, you know, acknowledge each other from a distance. But there's far less people out. The people who are out are being careful. You know, I'm sure that they're probably washing their hands when they're leaving too. I mean, when I come home from my office at the clients every day, I go right upstairs. I throw my clothes into the laundry hamper to take them downstairs to wash. I take a shower and clean myself up just so that there's, you know, with antibacterial soap and stuff, just to reduce the chance that I've brought something in on my person that I could transfer to my wife who has asthma. You know, so.
No, absolutely. I mean, if this results in much better hygiene for everyone, that's also a good thing.
Yeah, I didn't realize that hand washing wasn't something that was automatic. I've seen some people not do it. I remember a co-host of mine when I was in TV who explained that he didn't wash his hands after he urinated at a urinal because he knows that his hands are clean and he knows that his organ is clean.
It's the cleanest thing in the room if you're in a public washroom.
Well, that's, yeah. since he knows that he showers and his male organ is clean and his hands are clean, why should he wash his hands? And I said to him, have you ever heard of spray, back spray? You know, when you're urinating against a 90-degree angle, like you can't guarantee you're not getting stuff on your hands. You know, I was disgusted. And I remember sitting at one family dinner, and there was a guest of one of the family members from another country. And we were just joking about some people not washing their hands. He says, I'd never do. And then there's just dead silence. And that's what I wanted to get up and do.
Yeah, it's like,
I wanted to go.
Yeah, it's like, you know, don't pass the potato salad. That's
what have you touched? I think I told the story on the show before about a guy when I was working at CBC who would come out of the bathroom stall after defecating and didn't wash his hands.
Yeah,
and we referred to him as Edward Fecal Hands, and there was one editor
to be known as in the office.
There was one editor. I love this guy. He kept Lysol wipes on hand, and whenever this individual would come in, he would be writing down where the guy touched. And when the guy left, he got up immediately with the Lysol wipes, and he wiped down all these surfaces where the guy had been, where Edward Fecal Hands had been.
That's like a Seinfeld episode.
That's what made Seinfeld funny, is some of that stuff was outrageous, but a lot of it, some of us have experienced this stuff.
We're getting close to the end of our hour here.
But yes, we are.
I'll tell you a story that's even worse than that. It's come out of all of this, all about the toilet paper talk and all the rest. And it goes to bathroom habits as well. But I didn't realize that there's a subculture that exists on you find it on bulletin boards and some of the darker parts of the web, where there are men who literally do not wipe. And the reason they do not wipe is...
Yes.
Exactly. That's why I felt when I heard this. It's like, and the question is, well, what do you do then? Because, you know, there's all kinds of talk now about going, you know, getting bidets and all the rest, and it's much better way of doing it. It's like, so what's the story then? And what they will not do it, they go natural out of the bathroom because touching that part of your body, they're worried that might make them gay. I know there's silence. Exactly. There's silence. It's like, what now?
Worried.
It's your own. But they're just so homophobic that they won't even go near that area of themselves, even for sanitary purposes. So I thought, you know, that would be a nice story to end with.
I'm boggled. Hey,
look it up. I don't know.
I believe you 100%.
I don't know what keywords you would use on Google to find that.
Well, none, because I'm not looking it up.
But I read an article last week when the toilet paper pandemic was going on. Goodness. And they're saying, well, here's a bunch of people who don't really care. It's like,
so you're afraid it might make you gay.
Yeah, by touching that area.
Know if you are gay or not.
Well, but you're trying to apply reason to this situation, and it doesn't apply.
Yeah, it might make you gay, but it absolutely does make you stink like shit.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I'm sorry, Mrs. Lawtons, I tried. That's okay. But you are that explains the smell of some people that I've been around, and I'm like, why do they smell like fecal matter?
I'm just saying, yeah, this self-isolation might be a good thing for some people.
Oh, no. Oh my goodness.
I know, hygiene. We're all just a bunch of dirty apes.
Now, there's a place to end the show.
on a high note.
Yeah, on a high note.
You know, so people, wash your hands. Why?
You know, you're not supposed to touch.
Not in that order.
You're not supposed to touch your face, you know, and stuff like that. Yeah. But that story made me rub my eyes in disbelief. So now I have to go wash my hands. Okay. I just was like, oh my God. Okay.
All right. But everyone should be well. Like I say, they should wash their hands all the
Canadians
time.
Canadians are sensible people. We follow sensible rules. We are more of a communal people in the sense that we think of others as well as thinking of ourselves. It's not the culture of I got mine, you get yours. And so I think that we're going to come through this better than Italy did. I think that there's going to be tragic deaths. There'll be some older people who will die who could have had a few more years. Or a few more months, you know, and that's sad, you know, for their families and the friends and so on. We are going to see some other people, younger people, pass away from it as well, which is also sad. And yet every year, 3,500 people die of flu in Canada, and we're not even cognizant of it, nor do we mourn these people or talk about being sad about it. But anyway, we're going to come through this. We're going to come through this, and eventually somebody's going to come up with a vaccine or a treatment regimen for this. But in the meantime, you're home, you got the internet, you've got the means to research. Look at they're very simple precautions. Look at them, follow them. And also, yeah. If you know elderly people, if you live in an apartment or they're your neighbors, and you know that their family maybe lives far away in another province, and you know that they don't really have people that can support them, maybe make a point of just knocking on the door, talk through the door, say, how you doing? Just want to make sure you're okay.
Yeah.
Do you need anything? You know, you can bring them some groceries, leave it outside their door, let them know it's there, because there are a lot of old people who don't have family or support systems, and we really need to be checking in on them, because ultimately we are all family in one way or another, and if they're your neighbors, you know, they're your neighbors. So if you do know elderly people or people who are immunocompromised, and you know that they don't have a good social support system, be that social support system. Help them out. Just check on them.
Yeah, and it's great that Canadians tend to be good at looking after each other. I mean, we've had some missteps and all the rest, but, you know, I think on the whole, we care for each other. And the important thing too is, you know, if you're on the internet, make sure you're not passing around fake information. You know, the best resource is the World Health Organization. You know, they've got a thing called Mythbusters, which is great. And it's at www.who.int for international. Who.int, and they've got a whole pile of things about COVID viruses and separating fact from fiction. That's, you know, that it's not going to go away when it gets hot. It's not, you know, going to go away when it's cold. Mosquitoes don't carry it. Don't use ultraviolet light on yourself. Don't bathe in Clorox. I mean, all kinds of stuff. You know, garlic doesn't help you. Essential oils doesn't help you. Zinc doesn't help you. Just wash your hands, and if you're sick, stay the hell away from people. That's the best you can do.
That's the best thing. Though I would say that to the men who don't wipe, you should actually bathe in Clorox.
You shouldn't be going out anyway.
And remember that the Aaron O'Toole military guards outside your door are people too.
They're going to make you wape.
Yeah, so so make sure you treat them with due deference and respect and offer them a candy bar now and again.
Yep. On the end of a hockey stick.
Okay. Hopefully next week when we're talking, Stephen,
There'll be a little light news at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, yeah, and it won't be a train. So everybody, thank you for listening. Hopefully you've gained some sense of calm from the factual information we've been providing. And we've found a few laughs, which,
you got to laugh at the stuff that scares you the most. Otherwise, right. It's hard to cope.
Otherwise, it paralyzes you. And if you enjoy our conversation, support us at or any of our other FU Politics and FU Network series. You can do that by becoming a patron. You go to patreon.com. Patreon is spelled with an E. patreon.com. patreon.com/FU Network TV. Or if you want, that's a subscription that starts at $1 a month. Or if you want to give us a one-time boost, financial boost, we really appreciate that as well. You go to our email address through PayPal, and you can give it to us at funetworktv@gmail.com. Thank you all for listening. Stephen, thank you.
My pleasure. And I always forget to say, we have a Facebook page, which is the Stephen Show. It's at Stephen with a PH, Stephen with a V, show, all one word. Or you can follow both of us on Twitter. And we always will post these things and link back to the Facebook page. And we archive all of them on the Facebook page. And we have extra resources as well, links and things you want to follow. So, I'm at Stephen Lawtens, STPHENLAUTENS. That's and right. The other Stephen is?
At Stephen with a V, J, just the letter J, Kerzner, KERZNER. And guess what, Stephen? I actually checked.
You checked it. I'm so proud of you.
I checked my personal Twitter this week. In fact, I think I did it yesterday. After weeks of saying I was going to and then not doing it.
All this time on your hands.
Yeah, all this time on my hands, I'm checking it. Yeah.
and we love to hear from our listeners. So by all means, beep us one way or the other.
Okay. And keep an eye out, especially on Ed the Sox Twitter and social media at Ed the Sox for the Stir Party programming that you're going to be able to participate in from your home. We're going to make parties. We're going to make conversations. We're going to make dialogues along with our partner Stage 10 in this project and allow people to not be socially isolated when we're socially isolated. And we can still stay together and have conversations and enjoy each other's company, even if we're sitting at home doing it with a camera and a device. So keep an eye on that. That's coming next week, most likely.
Sounds like fun.
Yep. And thank you, Stephen. And
always a pleasure.
We'll talk next week. And
I hope so.
All of you out there, thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed the show, tell somebody else and pass it around, because word of mouth is the most powerful advertising.
Yep. And if you didn't enjoy it, keep it to yourself.
Absolutely. Shut up. I'm Stephen Kerzner. Thank you for joining us. And we'll talk again next week here on Stephen and Stephen Show on FU Politics, a division of Fund the FU Network.
This is Fun the FU Network.